after 12 days of running for buses, and commuters struggling to get the last train, and limited windows of service offered, the STM strike is finally over. Maintenance workers announced late Tuesday night they were putting their labor action on pause. The announcement came as Quebec Labor Minister Jean Boulet was widely expected to table Law 14 the following day. That law would give the minister broad power to end strikes that he finds are causing serious or irreparable injury. It also expands the definition of essential services to cases where the population's well-being is under threat. The bill was initially slated to come into effect at the end of the month, was passed back in May, but this transit strike caused the minister to rush it into effect. While the strike's end has been met with relief from many Montreal commuters, one labor expert says the circumstances under which it happened are cause for concern. Barry Eidlin is a McGill sociologist and an expert on labor rights and labor struggles here in Canada. We spoke while the strike was still ongoing about the threat of the new labor law and what it means for worker power. Take a listen.
So we're hearing a lot about STM strikes. We have two unions that one is currently on strike, one has had one strike day, and within the next 2 weeks could have two more that would shut down service. In a context where the maintenance workers union has gone on strike twice in the past 6 months, so far there's been no deal at the table. What we have been hearing, though, is a few possibilities from the government, from Labor Minister Jean Boulet at the provincial level. We've been hearing an openness to using a new piece of provincial legislation to essentially stop the workers from being able to strike. And I want to talk to you more about that, because my understanding is that this bill passed in May, set to come in effect at the end of the month, changes the way that the government can interfere in whether strikes can happen or not, what work is deemed essential or not. What is this bill actually changing? What power would the minister have?
Yeah, so Law 89 was passed in May. It's coming into effect November 30th. And it's precisely that. It changes this definition of what constitutes essential work by allowing for the consideration of inconvenience to the public, essentially. And it provides the labor minister, it takes that power out of the labor tribunal and into the hands of a commission that appointed by the labor minister to determine what constitutes essential work. And this kind of broad set of criteria could be used to order, pretty much, a fairly large group, a potentially infinite number of types of categories of workers back to work, right? Because there are a lot of groups of workers whose work is essential to the functioning of day-to-day society. And so you could pretty easily make an argument that, the work that they do is inconveniencing the public, is costing too much to society or what have you, right? The problem here, and this is related to where you started with the strikes dragging on like this, is that the specter of Bill 89 coming into effect has a corrosive effect on the collective bargaining process that affects the employer's willingness to come to the table, right? And that's precisely the problem with these kinds of back-to-work orders, legislations, what have you, is that they are corrosive to the collective bargaining process. It makes it harder to reach an agreement at the table, precisely because the employer knows that the pressure being exerted on them is temporary, because if they create enough of a crisis, they can count on the government to order workers back to work. And it's telling that all the proposed solutions for resolving the dispute have to do with limiting workers' right to strike. There's nobody that is noticing that there are two sides to the negotiation, and another possibility would be to pressure the employer to relax its position and actually come closer to a position that the workers are asking for, right? So they've already seen some movement on wages. Why not some movement on subcontracting? Why not some movement on scheduling? These are issues that the employer could address.
Well, yeah. I mean, in part, they're pressuring them to double down because from what I've heard, some of these are coming from the provincial government to transit agencies across the province where they're saying you have to find ways to cut costs. You have to be harsher on the unions. That's what the past transport minister, Genevieve Guilbeault, said last year, that it's up to the ARTM, the STM, and other agencies like it to be really tough during the collective bargaining process. We heard that the union actually chose this month-long strike because the bill was going to come into effect at the end of the month. They were saying this is our kind of last chance to do a big action. I just want to make sure I understand, like, what could the government do before the Quebec government if they said, okay, this strike has gone on too long? Was there any kind of mechanism for them to shut it down? Or is this something that's totally unprecedented?
Canadian provincial and federal governments have a long history of ordering workers back to work. And indeed, we actually distinguish ourselves amongst comparable G7 countries in our how frequently we resort to back-to-work orders. There's no other country that comes close. So what the option could have been is what we saw just last week in Alberta, right? Where there was the Alberta legislature passed a special law to order workers back to work, order teachers, striking teachers back to work. And in so doing, they invoked the notwithstanding clause, right? Because again, going back to a point I made earlier, what we're talking about here is infringing workers' charter protected right to strike, right? This isn't just something that's inconvenient. This is workers exercising fundamental constitutionally protected rights. And so that could have been an option, but I guess the CAC government's hope is that they don't have to pass repeated special laws and instead can just use this law on the books.
We're hearing a lot about what the union could change, and some of that is coming from a kind of perspective that seems to be siding with the employer a little bit. But there's also some of that that's coming from workers who say this is not the way to build worker solidarity, to shut down the STM, which, you know, people rely on who don't have a car, who don't have the means to get around in other ways. Are there ways to still give service to other workers, you know, without having them pay for it? Things like that. People are throwing around these ideas and just saying, you know, I want to stand with workers, but it's hard to feel solidarity when I feel attacked. What's your response to that?
A lot of work that workers do is essential to social functioning, to the day-to-day functioning of society. And that's particularly the case when you're dealing with public sector, right? And so unions are in this tricky position where withdrawing their labor by definition involves inflicting pain on the public in some way, right? And so in that case, the issue is essentially how you frame that fight, right? And so in this case, you know, because you think about, I mean, going back to, let's go back to the Front Commun strike, right? So when schools are shut down, that creates a social crisis, right? And it hits the working class the hardest, right? Because they're the ones who are the least able to be flexible with their jobs, and they're the ones who are least able to, you know, figure out alternative childcare arrangements and so on and so forth. When hospitals are shut down, that creates a social crisis, you know? So, like, it's not just about transit. This is you know, why social services are so important, right? Because they're essential to the function of day-to-day society. But what's notable is that depending on how the issues are framed, that can exert pressure on either side, right? So if you go back to the teachers' strikes in 2023, the strongest support for striking teachers was amongst parents of school-aged children, right? The people who were the most affected, the most inconvenienced, whose lives were turned the most upside down, who were the strongest supporters. And why was that? Because they understood that the issues that the teachers were striking for were fundamental to the future of public education in Quebec. They understood that if the teachers lost, that their children's education would suffer. And, you know, I think that some of that there's a messaging issue, right? And then it's an organizing problem, right? And so here, there's no silver bullet here that like this is that just because you craft your message right doesn't mean it's going to be received or heard. But, you know, the big issue here that is lost when all the discussion seems to be about wages is that this is a fight against privatization, right? And that the fight against privatization of public services has direct impact on the writing public, because one of the consequences of privatizing the maintenance is there's less maintenance because you cut corners on maintenance, and that will have knock-on effects in terms of the safety of the writing public, right? So why aren't we hearing more about that? You know, why aren't we hearing more about workers sort of taking a stand for the integrity of public services, right? So I think that's the issue here. And you really need the unfortunate fact is that because of the dynamics I was talking about earlier, the strike is dragging on longer than it probably would otherwise. But to get employers to move, they need a high degree of coercion. The problem is that if you're not disrupting the rhythm of day-to-day life, you're not exerting pressure on the employer. It's unclear to me that anything less than that would be any more conducive to reaching an agreement.
Dr. Barry Eidlin, thank you so much.
Thanks.
For CKUT, I'm Jules Bugel with the Local Journalism Initiative.